life's run down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.
Thanks for listening. I'm Brian Smith, the man who is hiding from smog, and this is episode 8 of Dynamite in the Brain, the podcast that loves anime and hates fun. Tonight I am joined by the zealot abandoner and DEFCON2.co.uk scribe, Anthony Askew, and the tea connoisseur, Mega Man legend, and Crystal Maze fan, Gary Hedges. And we are back once again to talk Deke.
Hello.
Hello.
Good evening.
Yes.
Or yeah. Good day, depending on what time of day you're listening to this.
We're a bit more reluctant now because we didn't record before, so...
Yes, we had just recorded a lot of this, and we're about to record it again.
But yeah,
on purpose, because we really just wanted to talk about Rainbow Bright.
Yes, that is where we left you off last week, was with Rainbow Bright. And I forgot to mention last week that the studio was Tokyo Movie Shinsha, once again. So I'm guessing it did have fairly good production values. Gary can confirm that. Can you confirm or deny that?
Absolutely, that was the only reason I ever watched it.
Good, good. my brain was trying to remember various sort of greetings card characters which had got licensed alongside around the same time. And I did go and check that there was the Get Along Gang the same year, which came out from Nelvana, but eventually Deke took it over. And they were also based on a greetings card line.
And the Get Along Gang were probably my first love of plushies because they had plushies that had detachable roller skates that you could wear. Or at least you weren't. I don't know if you were supposed to, but I did anyway.
That's pretty good.
Good, good. Yes, yeah, so, and they were like anthropomorphic animals. And I think there was a lot more male characters, so I think they were kind of more... They weren't.
Yeah, my sister liked the Get Along Gang, but was predominantly watching Rainbow Bright, and I was more of a Get Along Gang fan.
Yeah, like I said, I don't remember seeing the Rainbow Bright cartoon at all, but I definitely remember seeing the Get Along Gang cartoon at some point. But I don't think I think I was probably too old for it at that point. Which is odd, because there's some stuff like further on down the list I definitely did watch, despite hating it. I watched a lot. Which we shall get to that in the future. Yeah, so after that, there was a Rainbow Bright and the Star Stealer film in 1985, which I've not seen.
Thankfully, my parents didn't take us to watch that.
Yeah, I don't know if it got released in the cinema. I don't recall it. I don't think we got quite as many of these film versions over here in the UK.
Okay.
Because we got Transformers. That's the only one I remember seeing in the cinema over in the UK. Because the Action Force, or which is the renamed G.I. Joe,
yeah,
in the UK, that went straight to video. Because my brother had that, and we watched it an awful lot. And, yeah, unfortunately, I can remember far too many lines from that film. And and then also in 1985, a show we all watched was Mask.
Absolutely.
Stood for...
Mobile Armored Strike Command.
It's almost as if you've said all these words before.
Really?
Yeah, so Mask... was a show which was broadcast in the UK on TVAM, which was sort of the early morning channel, which unified all the local channels across the UK on the ITV network. And it was on a show called Wide Awake Club, which was like the weekend kids slot, which I think ran generally from like 7 o'clock in the morning to 9:30 before handing over to whatever the was on the rest of the channels. And that was presented by a guy called Tommy Boyd, and had various people like Michaela Strachan, Mike Myers, the future Austin Powers, and Wayne of Wayne's World was on there with a comedian called Neil Mullarkey, doing a thing called Sound Asleep Club, where they did two characters who were very tired. It was a joke, you see. He was the opposite of Wide Awake Club. The Japanese studios who were working on this that I found were Studio Kuromi and Visual 80. Kuromi is an animation finishing studio. There's very little they've sort of been the core studio on. And Visual 80 seemed to mainly be involved in sort of doing sort of co-production work and sort of dog's body work for international productions. On the show, I want to make a correction from previous. I think I might have mentioned that Shingo Araki worked on Pole Position. What I meant to say was it was Shinji Aramaki, who's a completely different guy, who's about
Easy mistake.
30 years younger as well than the other guy. He was a mecha designer and most famously known nowadays probably for being the guy behind the Appleseed revivals. The CG versions from the last few years.
Which aren't that good.
No, I saw one of them at Iacon in 2005.
Yeah, that's where I watched that one as well.
Which was nice to see in a cinema location. I think that we're going to see some anime in those cinemas again at this upcoming Iacon, from what I hear. That's the word on the grapevine.
Anything worth watching? Or
I don't know if anything can be announced yet.
But you just want Redline again, don't you?
I do want Redline. That's what I'm hoping for. I did see it a fourth time.
It must be good.
Must be coming up to your way soon, isn't those that Newcastle showing coming up soon?
I have got that site bookmarked, so I need to keep checking, but touch wood, yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, also on the staff, there was Tomonori Kogawa, who was a character designer who worked on Odin, and he was also co-creator of Aura Battle of Dunbuy, which is a fantasy mecha show. Odin, I don't know if either of you guys have seen, is sort of was famously derided by sort of people who came into anime fandom around my age as sort of being overlong, boring, I think, is its greatest. But I've never seen it. But
nah, no, me neither.
As I mentioned, the first time we were recording, I did once see a video copy of it begging to be taken home in Minami. After failing to sell in the Bring and Buy store at one of the Minami cons, it was sitting in the Novotel corridor with a little sign begging to be taken home.
Do you reckon anybody actually did take it?
I suspect not.
It's still there.
Somebody from the staff out of curiosity.
Yeah.
I suspect it was one of the staff who were trying to get rid of it. Also that working on there is Masayuki Kojima, who's the director of the animated adaptation of Noki Urasawa's Monster, which is a pretty good show, but I'd recommend the 18-volume comic over that. Right, moving on. Jason the Wheeled Warriors.
Yeah.
Yay.
Boo.
Yes.
No, I'm just kidding.
You need to watch it first.
I've seen bits. I've seen bits, but go on. Tell us why you like it.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it partly because it was so hard to see when I was a kid. As I mentioned in the very first episode of Dynamite in the Brain, and about 20 minutes ago, when we weren't recording this.
The lost episode.
Yes. Where I lived, you could get three ITV channels. You get Yorkshire, which served Yorkshire, Central, which served the Midlands, and Anglia, which served Norfolk. And it was only showing on Anglia to begin with, and that was where we got the weakest reception, which is odd because that was also the area we were closest to. So I guess it was just how the aerial positioned on my parents' house. And so I only sort of caught it briefly sort of on the portable TV where we got an adjustable aerial, or if I was at one of my grandparents' houses. And so, yeah, when it eventually showed up, I think, on Channel 4 later, I'm guessing as part of that package of Deke shows they must have bought, seeing as there seemed to be an awful lot of Deke shows they showed in the 90s. Yeah, I was quite happy to actually watch it, even though I was probably an adult then, and enjoy it on like a Sunday morning basis. So, Gary, what do you like about it?
It was, I think, again, the whole vehicles thing. As we said in the Lost episode, one of the things about Mask that I found was the toy line of Mask kind of made the cartoon look not so good in comparison. But with Jace, although it was made to support a toy line, the toy line didn't come out in the UK. So you only had the cartoon to go on, but thankfully the cartoon was pretty cool. But yeah, essentially the storyline revolved around two kind of different factions. You had the Lightning League, which were led by Jace, and they were a series of vehicles that had to battle the Monster Mines, which were vehicles led by Sawboss. And they were vehicles made out of plants. So it was a lot of kind of vehicular combat was made the main centerpiece of each episode. Basically, Jace, the storyline was that he was trying to search the galaxy to find his father, who accidentally created the Monster Mines in the first place, but has disappeared with the original members of the Lightning League. And the idea is that he needs to find his father to reunite the Root, which is apparently what they need in order to get rid of the Monster Mines forever. And it seems that every planet the Lightning League went to, looking for his father, the Monster Mind and Sawboss wouldn't be too far behind.
Aww.
Yeah, and his the Lightning League were Jace, who's our hero.
Yep.
He's got very cool hair, I've got to say that. I love his hair.
He's like a badger.
Yeah. Looks good. I could see Snap with that at some point in his hair career. Sort of throw that one in there.
There was, is it Gillian or Gillian?
Gillian, I think it was pronounced. Gillian, yes. Or at least that's what I pronounced it.
Who was a wizard, and also basically the Obi-Wan Kenobi of the show.
Yeah, he actually was the one that created all of the Lightning League vehicles. I think he was the only one from the original Lightning League that didn't disappear. So obviously when Jace went looking for his father, Gillian basically built Jace and the new Lightning League a whole batch of new vehicles.
So he was a wizard as well as a part-time mechanic. Yeah.
Absolutely.
There was Flora, who was a girl created from a flower.
Yep.
I think that was the one nod to actually having any sort of female audience for this cartoon.
That was it. Well, she had that giant fish that she could fly on.
She could talk to animals. Obviously, things a cartoon maker might think a girl likes to do.
A giant fish?
Yes, a giant fish called Brock.
Brock, but it looked female.
And hold on, this flew, or was it only was it restricted to water?
No, it could fly.
Oh, right, okay.
She could fly on it because she was small enough. Another cool thing about Flora was she had like a kind of spider sense thing going on that she was able to detect monster minds immediately when they were nearby.
She was a plant as well.
Yeah, so she could immediately sense them somehow.
Hmm.
Oh, apparently she had three other pets as well, which I'd forgotten about, called the Zoggies.
Yeah, they didn't appear much in the cartoon from what I remember.
Yeah, there was Oon. Oon was
awesome.
He was a lot like No-No from Ulysses 31. But he was like a tiny little knight, a tiny little robot knight.
Oh, he looks pretty good, him, yeah.
Yeah, Oon was awesome. Again, he was quite cowardly, much like Nunu, but he was devoted to serving his master, Jace.
And Herc Storm Sailor, who was basically Han Solo.
The smuggler with the ship.
Yes, so not inspired by Star Wars in the slightest. Working on this show, there was a couple of notable studios. There's Sunrise Animation, most famous for the Gundam franchise, obviously, and Shaft, who at this point hadn't done any of their own sort of productions, which were notable for being, oh, that's a Shaft cartoon. They were sort of doing in-betweens, backgrounds, sort of fill-in work. But now, obviously, they're famous in Japan for Akiyuki Shinbo's works in the whole. A good example recently is Madoka Magica, which people are still going insane on my Twitter feed for. Even 20 minutes on after I mentioned that in the previous.
Have you watched that yet, Brian?
I watched the first episode of it, and I was like, I can't even muster the enthusiasm to hate this.
Why, is it that bad?
It's not bad, it's just not my cup of tea.
Ah, fair enough.
Also working on the show, in terms of staff, we've got Tetsuya Endo, who worked on the Sayuki shows and Digimon X-Cross Wars. Well, that might be Cross Wars. Probably is Cross Wars, but I just called it X-Cross Wars twice now. Yoshihito Hata, who did a lot of Pokemon episodes. And Hitoshi Namba, who recently did Hero Man, is currently directing the detective show Gosick. Writing it, though, there are a couple of notable names. The first one is Larry DiTillio, who I knew, I think, yeah, I would have come across his name before I started coming across his name when I finally saw a lot of Jace, and that was actually paying attention to who was doing it. As he wrote a Call of Cthulhu role-playing game campaign called Masters of Nyarlathotep, which is generally considered one of the best role-playing game adventures ever written.
Mm-hmm.
He also was one of the brains behind Transformers Beast Wars. And he also worked on a show which the other name created. And that other name is J. Michael Straczynski, who's probably most famous for being the creator of Babylon 5.
Mm.
He also did screenplay. He's done screenplay for lots of things, but he wrote the screenplay for Changeling, that recent Angelina Jolie.
Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood film. Yeah.
He also wrote the screenplay for the Jason Award Warriors film that never happened.
And he also wrote a lot of comics which tend to start off well and then sort of tail off badly.
He's good at starting off strong.
That criticism could also be applied to Babylon 5 and probably Jason the World Warriors as well.
I was going to ask about that. Did Jace actually finish? Did it?
It was much like the Transformers in that the actual episodes, there were certain episodes that would be story arcs that would span, say, two episodes at most, or maybe three.
Right.
But the actual series didn't have a finale. The idea was that the film that Straczynski had penned was going to be the finale that was going to finish it all up. But the production of the film was based on whether or not it was popular enough at the time, and they decided against it.
I think you should start an online petition, Gary. Get this film into motion.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there must be multiple ones of them already out there.
True, but Gary's would be more powerful. Obviously, he's the largest Jace fan out there.
I must admit, one of the things I did like, I'm not going to overly spoil the screenplay, but one of the things I did like is, as a kid kind of growing older, me and my friends would have this discussion, and we all had this horrible thought that because Aldrich's Jace's father, he disappeared in the explosion that created Sawboss. And we all had this whole, because it was heavily Star Wars inspired,
that he would be.
We was going to find out that Sawboss is actually Jace's father, Aldrich. Thankfully, that wasn't in the film, which is good.
See, I think that would be pretty good if that was that.
Yeah.
Because if
Aldrich being Sawboss would just be too cliche.
Yeah, I think there's enough episodes later on which sort of would discredit that idea anyway. I seem to remember those. Enough hints later.
Not surprising actually, because I think Sawboss is actually kind of reveals that he is also looking for Aldrich.
Yeah, and there's enough hints that he's been to planets they later go to quite recently. Later on, because they're like following his trail almost.
That's it. They follow his trail and it kind of leads on through planets, although a lot of episodes you could watch in different orders and you wouldn't really miss too much.
No.
Only when they introduce new vehicles that obviously are then reused later.
And you love your vehicles.
I do. In fact, I have a small confession to make. As I got older, I actually tracked down a bunch of the Jason Ward Warriors toys on eBay.
Did you get them?
Yeah, I've got them. They're sitting on my shelf, pride of place, next to my original Generation 1 Optimus Prime.
How much did you pay?
Oh, God knows. Not too much, thank God.
Right.
Are they plastic or die-cast?
They're plastic. They're not particularly great because one of the downfalls of Jace was that the toy sales dictated how long they kept the cartoon running. But the problem was the toys had come out a lot earlier than the series. So the actual toys were just called World Warriors, and they came with a pilot. Lightning League came with pilots, but the pilots were these generic people in orange jumpsuits. So there was no Jace, there was no toy of Aldrich or Gillian or Flora, there was no toy of Oon. All of that were they were all characters added to the cartoon to kind of make it more popular. Because World Warriors originally, the Lightning League vehicles were just generic.
Yeah, a bit like how Zoids would have just sort of a gold person in one thing and a silver person in another.
The actual storyline for Jason Ward Warriors was all developed purely for the cartoon because they felt that the toys couldn't really sell a story on their own because it was just you had a group of the Lightning League and a group of the Monster Minds. The Monster Mind toys came with these little green blobs of slime that you put in the pilot seats.
Right,
and Sawboss is the wrong colour, which is annoying.
Okay. I want to see a picture of this little collection of yours to put on the site.
Maybe I'll take a picture of it and we can put it in the link.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Moving on. Also in 1985, there was Kissy Fur.
One of Brack's faves.
And I think this came to the UK much later than 1985.
I seem to remember it being a bit later than that.
Yeah, because I think the phrase I have in my mind is poor man's raccoons.
Yeah, very.
But because looking at the, I mean, it came out the same year as Raccoons in terms of production and US release or wherever Raccoons got released, Canada probably. But I think we had Raccoons in the UK a lot earlier. probably around 1985. I don't think there was much of a gap.
And it looks to be that Raccoons was the better show as well.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah, Kissy Fur was about this bear and his single dad who ended up living in a swamp, and they'd protect the other animals from these, were they crocodiles or alligators? Who were like rednecks. It was awful. It was pretty awful. It was, it got showed on BBC, I think. It wasn't something ITV was showing. And I don't recall this ever being re-shown after the first time it was shown.
After one episode.
Because he's called Kissyfurs because they can't pronounce Christopher properly as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Ugh.
I believe that is the reason why. Yeah, it's horrible. It's a terrible cartoon. Nobody watch it.
I wonder if it's got a DVD release.
If you even think about watching it, do yourself a favour and watch The Raccoons instead.
What's next?
Also, next on 1985 is The Care Bears, another greetings card.
Yeah, really heartwarming stuff, this. This is my venture into camp cartoons, this one, I think.
You two have seen this, I haven't. The Care Bears craze generally passed me by. I think my brother bought one Care Bear. I think that was it.
I think Care Bears lasted quite a while and had a cult following because of the fact that each Care Bear would have a symbol on their chest to represent their name, and it was kind of a different, usually an emotion or trait. So you would, like, they became popular amongst, I think, older people as well, because each person would have a Care Bear they identified with. I didn't watch a huge amount of it. Again, I was still very much a kid at the time, so I watched it when it was on. I think I may have had one or two Care Bears. I think I had the main leader of the Care Bears and the Care Bear cousins, which followed afterwards, where they were animals rather than bears. But like I think I said when we were discussing this originally, I was more of a Wuzzles fan because they had a lot more going on. The designs weren't simplistic.
Didn't the Care Bears have a film as well? Because I seem to remember watching a special or something like that.
Yeah, they did. There was it was about a boy called, I think it was called Darkheart or something. I vaguely remember it, but
Three feature films.
Wow.
The first one was done by Nell Varner, but I'm not sure any of them were actually done by Deke. And I think that one did come out in the cinema in the UK. Seem to recall seeing that one as well.
Yeah, I have a feeling it did. I don't think I saw it at the cinema. I think it was more of a VHS release after the event.
Yeah. Used to be nice watching a nice cartoon like this. Did you watch it with your sister, Gary, or was this a purely...
I think my sister actually was into Care Bears as well, to a degree.
I mean, they were huge. I remember seeing them everywhere when... And they were huge for a long time as well, that's the other thing.
Yeah.
Even once the sort of cartoon side of things died down, I think their popularity as greetings card characters did hang around a long time. I mean, I think they came around in 1981, and so the last feature film was in 1987.
I don't know which one I've seen. I'm sure there was a dragon in the one I've seen. I'm sure there was.
Yeah, I don't recall seeing any of the film. Well,
I've only seen the one with the boy that basically hated people, and it was the Care Bears had to kind of unite together to stop him kind of thing.
Oh, see, such heartwarming stuff. Lovely.
Yeah, but they actually had to fight the guy. Well, I say fight. They would do their little Care Bear stare and beams would come out of their stomachs. I think that's kind of where Teletubbies probably nicked the idea from.
Oh, the Teletubbies. Aye.
Righty-ho. Next up. 1985, next on my list is Robot Man and Friends, which was some sort of, I think it was straight to video or TV special, apparently. I've never seen it, but it is on YouTube, so I shall stick a link in the...
I've never seen this. Looking at screenshots of what it looks like, the little robot man, I don't recall ever even catching a glimpse. Was it given a TV run over here, or was it purely...
Well, it was just a TV special, so... it might have come out on tape over here. I'm guessing that was, I mean, here, and at this point we're now sort of getting into stuff where they're not using a lot of the bigger studios. They're not using sort of TMS much anymore. They'll be coming back in 1986. At some point in 1986, they were running out of money, and Chaplin and Haywood had had a falling out as well. And so apparently Haywood sold the rights to a lot of the old shows to Saban, and then Saban sold them back to Chaplin. So I think you kind of see a bit of a decrease in quality. Well, there's definitely a decrease in quality at this point. I mean, as we'll get to in the next show. But yeah, I think they're not using such great studios as time goes by. And we're not seeing the same sort of quality we saw on Ulysses 31. And we, talking of very poor quality, our next show is Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling.
Woo!
Which I think there was only one Japanese studio on, and that's Shaft. And they may have only been drawing backgrounds or something.
Probably.
Yeah, this was a cartoon about Hulk Hogan and his friends fighting various heels from the WWF.
Led by Rowdy Roddy Piper, I believe?
Yeah, I looked that up. None of the wrestlers are voiced by the real guys either.
Yeah, that was tragic.
That needs to be mentioned.
Although, to be fair, I had to look it up to find out if they were. Something told me that they weren't, but I'm pretty sure as a kid I really couldn't tell the difference.
I think they might have had live action segments or something.
Yeah, well, I watched the intro and there was like a Hulk Hogan walking through the street and swarms of people wanting to meet him and stuff. I don't know.
Oh, come on. You can't just say not voiced by the real wrestlers. We should actually mention who some of the not real wrestlers were. And I mean, and who they were playing. Let me see if I can find it on IMDb. There's at least two big names in there. And we'll get some even bigger names in a later show. Playing Hulk Hogan is Brad Garrett, who, better known as, what's his name? From Everyone Loves Raymond, his brother.
Oh, really? Robert, I know who you mean.
Yeah. Robert Barone from Everyone Loves Raymond.
That's crazy.
And then Eddie Stark from Till Death. That was his own sitcom, wasn't it? Yeah, so he does a lot of voice acting, but yeah, he was Hulk Hogan. And
I'm curious, actually, did Captain Lou Albano not voice himself? Because you'd have thought he would, given that he was doing the Super Mario Brothers Super Show at the similar time, I think.
Yes, but possibly he couldn't because he was doing that, and that was somebody else making.
Yeah, maybe.
But yeah, it just seemed odd.
I think that was that also Deke, but not a Japanese animation studio?
I'm not sure. Let me just check. But yeah, the other voice playing the Junkyard Dog.
I've looked this up, it's hilarious.
Is James Avery, who of course is better known as Uncle Phil from
Fresh Prince.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Go to your room,
and
Will.
And he also did Shredder in the Turtles clone.
Oh, yes. So he was. Yeah, so. Oh, no. Super Mario Super Show was 1989, so.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah, Lou Albano wasn't doing cartoon voices at that point. You're right, it was Deke.
Charles Adler did the voice for Piper.
Yeah, and he's sort of. He was like one of the first sort of people's names I recognised from doing cartoons when I was a kid, because he showed up on various things. I think he even showed up around the time they were launching Tiny Toons. I think they even had him go round the UK doing TV interviews. Because they really pushed that, partly because of the Steven Spielberg connection. But yeah, so Brad Garrett, yeah, stand-up comedian, and then moved into voice acting, and then sort of turned that into becoming a big star in sitcoms.
Fancy that. Do you think he was right for the role of Hulk Hogan?
I can't even remember. I just remember it was basically, unless you had satellite, it was your only exposure to WWF in the UK. And two, it was terrible. It was a terrible cartoon.
Yeah, it looked, from the intro, because I feel like I remember it somehow, but it looks atrocious.
It pretty much is.
Oh, goodness.
And there was an interview on Figure Four Wrestling with Larry Mullen, who was... He eventually became a writer for the WWE much later on when in his 60s, but he was involved in setting this up. And apparently it started out as something completely different. It was going to be a live-action show, like a live-action drama with Hulk Hogan.
Oh, God.
Apparently somehow ended up being a cartoon. But yeah, it was very cheap and very cruddy. But at the same time, it was WWF. It was like some sort of strange window into a world you only sort of didn't really know about.
Mm.
Sort of American wrestling. Because at the time we had, World of Sport might have still been going on at that time. I can't really remember when we got it. We might have got it a lot later than 85, to be honest, which might have made it seem even crappier. Because I seem to remember it being followed by the Police Academy cartoon, which was much later in terms of production and also really shitty. Right, moving on to a much less shitty cartoon. Dennis the Menace, or as it was known over here, Dennis, because we've already got a Dennis the Menace and we don't need another one. It's from 1986. And this is based on the Hank Ketcham newspaper strip.
Which Dennis do you prefer? Throw that one.
DC Thompson one, of course.
Oh.
Though I suspect this one might be a better cartoon than any of the
oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
I didn't think, I don't think Beano transferred well to cartoon.
It should do, really, though. I just don't think they've ever had the right animation studio doing it.
Probably.
I was
a fan of Dennis. I think it was it Saturday morning thingy?
Yeah, I think so. Something like that. But it was Tokyo Movie Shinsha back again working on it, so it had much better production values than a lot of the 1985 shows. And notable staff on this is Hiroshi Saito, who I think we've mentioned before when we were doing our rundown of that, was it Wednesday night slot we were talking about? He worked on Vicky the Viking and various... World Masterpiece Theatre. And he'd go on to... Yeah, so he directed loads of really classy anime shows in the 70s and early 80s. And he'd also go on to direct the 1990s Moomin, which we also had in the UK. But yeah, he's a name.
Is that the Moomin where they spoke?
Yes. Not the felt one where it was narrated.
Oh, that was so much better.
It was the anime Moomin. Yeah, the felt one was much better. But the anime one wasn't too bad. So basically, blonde-haired kid in dungarees terrorising his neighbour, Mr. Wilson. Repeatedly. The look went back to sort of the Heathcliff and the Inspector Gadget look, really.
That's the
vibe I got when I first saw it. In terms of production, I think it's probably one of the better of the sort of post Mysterious Cities of Gold dig shows. I think it's definitely available. Must be available on DVD over here. Certainly available on DVD in America. I seem to remember it coming out on like sort of budget, sort of pocket money DVDs almost. Back when I was working at Videolog. But yeah, not sure how much interest there is in it now, except for maybe parents buying it for their kids after watching.
Yeah, I used to enjoy watching this actually.
I quite enjoyed it as well.
Dennis!
And also there was live action ones later on with, was it Walter Matthau?
Yeah, as Mr. Wilson.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen any of those.
I've seen the live action.
No, I was going to say, I've not seen the live action. Was it any good?
What you'd expect, really. Nothing special, but...
Alright, moving on. Real Ghostbusters, also 1986. Again, Hiroshi Saito worked on a lot more episodes of this than he did Dennis, and also had J. Michael Straczynski and Larry DiTillio on the script.
I love this. This is my favourite of the list, definitely.
Off the shows, when I was watching the shows, this was definitely my favourite. I think up until the point at which... I mean, I'm guessing it's probably only the first season I liked, because I think they swapped out the woman who was doing Janine's voice after the first 60 or so episodes. And then not much later, Lorenzo Music stopped voicing Peter. and they brought somebody else in. And at that point, I was like, oh, don't like it. It's changed too much.
Who was your favourite Ghostbuster?
Well, it's Peter Venkman, of course.
Oh, I like Egon.
It had to be Venkman. And the guy that did his voice was brilliant in the cartoon.
Yeah.
And he did Garfield as well, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
Oh, right.
Which, of course, has the irony of that when they did the Garfield live-action shows that you had...
Bill Murray, who played Peter Venkman.
Playing Garfield, yeah. Yeah, I think it had pretty good writing, and I think the character design was also generally great, but I think the animation couldn't quite live up to either of those two parts a lot of the time. I don't think it was a little overambitious, I think, in terms of writing stuff that might be a bit too difficult to actually animate, and also perhaps having character designs which were a little bit too difficult to animate, but I loved it at the time.
Yeah. This reached IGN's 22nd best animated TV show.
Notable people, other people who were working on it. There was Masayuki Kojima, and he worked on... he was working on... we mentioned him before. Yeah, he's the monster guy. And Minoru Okazaki, who was director of Dr. Slump. Both Dr. Slumps, in fact. Dragon Ball... did some episode direction on Dragon Ball Z. Yes, obviously, he's a fairly big name. He was doing unit direction work on there as well. But yeah, so, I love Ghostbusters. When did Ghostbusters come out? 84, was it?
Did you ever see Ghostbusters animation, the one that made them put the reel in front of it? That was quite dire.
Not until much, much later. I think they did release it on DVD eventually over here. While I was working at Videolog, so that's when I first actually saw what it looked like. Have you seen the live-action version?
No, that was based on a live-action show, wasn't it, from the 70s?
It was, yeah.
Any good?
Not from what clips I've seen, no, it looks horrible.
Nothing to rival the actual Ghostbusters film, which...
Oh, of course not.
It was awesome.
Just looks like some sort of... I mean, it kind of... So, you know, you've got the... what's their names? The Croft brothers... So you've got all their sort of weird 70s kids shows they did in America, like H.R. Puff and stuff. And it looked like, which is like really cheap, but it's like very surreal, trippy stuff. Well, the live action version of Ghostbusters, the 70s thing or whenever it was, looks like a really cheap and tacky version of that. It's like, oh, they're doing that with somebody in a costume. Do that too. Yeah, it just looks so terrible. Just horrible, horrible. The 70s were horrible. The 80s were horrible. Everything's generally horrible in the past. Let's head to the future. other people working in the there's other pretty big names. They got Ray was played by Frank Welker, who's probably, if you look at Box Office Mojo, he's the name who has the best box office against him, because he tends to do, if there's an animal which needs a voice doing anywhere in Hollywood, he's the guy you call in to do it.
Mm.
And he was also Freddy on Scooby-Doo, in terms of... he plays Nibbler on Futurama. Maurice LaMarche was Egon. Yeah, so Frank Welker was Ray. Maurice LaMarche was Egon. Obviously, he's famous as doing various bit parts on Futurama. He played the Brain on Pinky and the Brain, amongst other things. And Arsenio Hall was Winston, at least to begin with. He obviously found great fame later on as a chat show host in America, and then eventually appearing on Martial Law with Sammo Hung.
Oh, I remember that show. God, that was hilarious.
I know, I've not seen that for ages. I want to go back. I think it wasn't great to begin with. I think they brought Arsenio Hall on as his partner. I think it worked a lot better. Obviously, they were just trying to recreate Rush Hour chemistry, but with a different black guy and a different Chinese guy.
Martial Law, goodness. But yeah, I still love the real Ghostbusters.
The toy line was good as well. I was a big fan of that as a kid.
I had some of the toys, I think.
Because the toys obviously followed the cartoon rather than the film, so the characters were the same as they were in the cartoon. But the toys were pretty inventive. The only thing that wasn't good for parents of children of the 80s was the pots of slime, because unlike something like Play-Doh that was safe to get on the carpet, the Ghostbuster slime totally wasn't. and would stick to it and ruin it, and it would ruin skirting boards and wallpaper.
You sound like you're talking from experience.
I was about to say
I was just going to say, yeah, absolutely. I remember because my birthday being the week before Christmas, whatever year things were hot, the year that Ghostbusters was hot, I think I got like the car for my birthday and then the Ghostbusters HQ base for Christmas. And every time you bought something like that, you'd always get a pot of slime. And I think I bought pots of slime from relatives and, yeah, I kind of devastated my room a bit with it, a bit of redecorating. Yeah, they probably would get away with releasing that sort of toy now, I wouldn't
know. No, the good old thing.
I think there's probably been great advancements in slime science. So
slime. Yeah, you're probably right. Slime science that doesn't harm the upholstery and interior decorating.
Was it edible or not?
I don't know. I don't think I ever tried.
Not in terms of, like, intentionally being edible, but, like, would it kill you?
No, it didn't smell like it was, though, because I remember as a kid, Play-Doh always smelled like it would be tastily, like, would taste good. But Ghostbusters slime, I don't think did.
Did you learn from experience that Play-Doh didn't taste good?
Yeah, I think I did.
Yeah, I think everybody did.
I mean, right. What do you get? We used to use our mum's, like, cookie cutter templates to make cookies out of Play-Doh, and then it was tragic whenever you put them in your mouth and realised you couldn't actually
yuck.
Eat them.
Yuck. Oof. Bad bellies all around.
Absolutely.
Right, yeah. Oh, okay. Next on the list is the Popples, which I remember the toy line of, but I don't remember the cartoon at all.
Yeah, see, that was another one. I didn't put my name down as having seen the cartoon because I don't remember anything of it, but I remember a lot of merchandise of this. I think my sister had a lot of the toys and, like, plastic beakers with Popples on, lunch boxes with Popples on. I couldn't tell you a thing about
the
actual
toys were like plush toys where they sort of folded in on themselves so you couldn't tell what sort of animal it was until you popped them apart, wasn't that?
Yeah, they kind of folded into like a, inside of almost like a pouch with just their head sticking out. Very bizarre.
Very, very bizarre.
Okay. Then there's the Kingdom Chums, which I don't know at all, but there's on YouTube, and it appears to be some sort of Christian.
I thought I hadn't seen this, but after checking it out, I remember the main character going, unbelievable. That was his little tagline thing, and I seem to remember that, but I don't know how. So I must have seen it at some point.
And there was apparently something called Meet Julie, which I couldn't find anything about.
Nothing, no.
Searching for the phrase Meet Julie isn't very useful.
No.
And then, which is probably the last show until sort of late 80s that I remember seeing, at least for a while, is Alf Tales. Do I really
remember?
Presumably
based on the sitcom Alf?
It was, yeah.
Yes. Alf was alien life form. Wasn't his real name Gordon Shumway? It was like this orange alien who was stuck on Earth, living with his family, getting up to hijinks, and he wanted to eat cats, because that's what they ate on his home planet, was cats. and Alf Tales, I think, started off as like tales of his life on his home
planet.
Melmac. That was it, Melmac, that was his home planet. But then I think it eventually sort of turned into like fairy tale parodies with Alf in them. I think that was generally how it ended up. I think I vaguely remember that being on ITV, sort of, probably like 4:45 to 5:15 or something, like the last thing they'd show before, God, what Blockbusters started. Notable on this is that they start using another animation studio, which they use a lot of in the coming years, which is, I'm guessing they're called Mook DLE rather than Mook. Well, they were just called Mook back then. I think they merged for Mook DLE later. And they work on loads and loads of Western programs. Not just for Deke. Most recently, they've been doing stuff for Transformers Animated, which is the last Transformers series before. Is it Transformers Prime, the new one? But they're doing a lot of those Scooby-Doo movies, and all sorts of things. But Deke will use them a lot from this point on various of their shows. Right. Next, there's Beverly Hills Teens. Oh, I don't remember at all.
Nah.
Me neither.
The opening's on YouTube. I think at the time, it was obviously some sort of craze about things having Beverly Hills in them. Probably. I don't know if it's just due to Beverly Hills Cop or whether it was just like,
when I looked at it, I thought it was kind of some kind of rip-off of like Archie or something.
Yes, it did look like that. But obviously there was like obsession with, was it mall girl speak? Sort of the slang that American teenage girls were using at the time. Or maybe I'm too old and you're too young to remember all this obsession with Beverly. I mean, obviously then you had Fresh Prince of Bel-Air sort of similar.
Yeah.
Mm. Sort of Hollywood becoming obsessed with itself almost. As if they could do that. Next up in 1987 is Dinosaurs.
Had a good intro.
Which, Gary, you thought you remembered, but...
Yeah, recent delving into it turns out I don't think Dinosaurs has got any airing over here, so I must have been looking up kids' TV, saw the intro to Dinosaurs and thought that was cool, and then convinced myself I'd seen it.
It does look really good. Well, it probably wasn't, but it looks like something.
For a kids' TV show in the 80s, it looks quite good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of very in that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles style. The first animated series did start in 1987 as well, but it was the very end of 1987. Let me just check when Dinosaurs began. They were preempted. But obviously the comic and the hype behind the comic had been building for... since about 1984, I think, for the Turtles.
And obviously kids love dinosaurs.
They do, yes. I think we've already established...
Yeah, we have.
What's your favourite dinosaur, Gary?
My favourite dinosaur?
Yes.
Probably a T-Rex.
T-Rex, yeah, there we go. Another vote for T-Rexes. I'm alone in my Stegosaurus love.
I mean, the only reason I say T-Rex is... because Grimlock was my favourite of the Dinobots.
Good call.
He had the most character to him, to be fair.
Yeah, by the looks of things, most of these Deke 87 shows all came out in September that year. So we had Alf, Beverly Hills Teens, also from Deke, but not really in Japanese animation studios, Adventures of Teddy Ruxpin. That's not on my list.
A good year.
Oh, but on my list is Lady Lovely Locks. Which was the thing I had in mind when you were asking whether Rainbow Bright was sort of an American magical girl show.
Mm.
Because this one also kind of resembles one. It's another Greetings Corporation character. Creators of Strawberry Shortcake, Care Bears and the Popples. Oh, I hadn't realised the Popples were also... Greetings characters, basically in yet another characters line. It was a toy line, which apparently were dolls, with very long hair.
But changed the, look colours, at, I think, or something.
Yes. But the character had got, like, looking at the opening, which is all I've seen of it, she'd got, like, magical sort of animals floating around her as assistants, which is the thing which made me, which when I saw it, I was like, American magical girl show. So I don't know whether that was part of the influence or whether it's just always a good idea to have magical pets around characters you're selling to little girls.
Probably. Looking at it, tragically, I actually seem to remember my sister had some of these because you attached different hair extensions that were different colours to it and stuff. I don't remember the cartoon, but I think she was definitely into the toy line.
Well, that's okay. I mean, she is female after all.
Yeah, absolutely.
If it'd been you that was into it.
Maybe I stole some of the locks and, you know, kitted out.
Added it to your own hair.
Yeah.
Added to my own hair. Say, better.
Put your Montgomery Moose roller skates on. Lady Lovelocks hair extensions.
I think they might have been a bit too small for him at this age.
Tragically.
Yeah. You tried, though. You did try. But yeah, I never ever want to see this again.
Working on this was Tatsunoko Productions. Was she in Tatsunoko versus Capcom?
She's not. Unless she was
yes,
a secret.
No, she is. No, she's not. No, it would be good though. But no, it looks terrible. This. It was probably good if you were female.
Yeah.
But if you've
and
got
into dolls.
Yeah, but otherwise, keep away from it.
Then we've also from 1987. There's Barbie and the Rockers. Which I think was like a... I don't think that was a TV show. I think that was just like a
special
video. Yeah, TV special. Barbie and the Rockers Out of This World.
Seen as above for me. Never want to see this ever again.
Well, see, I looked at it and the immediate premise, I thought this has got to be a ripoff of Gem and the Holograms. And then from digging into it, it turns out I was completely right. basically, Gem and the Holograms, which was a very popular cult cartoon, similar type of thing, about a Gem and her pop group, they sold a lot of dolls at the time, which were produced by Hasbro. So Mattel, in order to compete for the popularity that Gem was getting, decided that if they made Barbie and the Rockers, they could then sell Barbie dolls that had a rock thing going on and kind of claw
it. It probably worked as well.
I don't know. I definitely remember my sister had Barbies. I don't remember any of them being rockers, but she also had Gem. But I think the Gem dolls came with like cassettes with songs on, so there was like an added appeal there.
Hmm.
I mean, it hasn't really changed much because they released loads of Barbie straight to DVD things in the 2000s, which were basically trying to be recasting Barbie as sort of Disney princess type characters.
Barbie is the Nutcracker and stuff.
Yeah. So I think Mattel's general approach is to turn Barbie into whatever the popular thing is at the time.
Barbie is the Nutcracker.
That would be quite funny if she was this very butch, man-hating... different type of film.
But yeah, basically, you can watch all of this show on YouTube. It appears to have been all put up by some kind soul who wants to save it for posterity. And obviously, neither Deke nor Mattel are so angry that they've had it removed.
They're probably liking it. But yeah, seriously, yeah. If you were going to watch it, you'd be better off to watch Gem because it's got a better, catchier intro.
Can we have a rendition, Gary?
I can't sing.
I'm all for hearing lyrics that thing well. Or impressions.
I think Gem was something which was on the Wide Awake Club. I think probably was on Whack-A-Day, which was their weekly episode presented by Timmy Mallett. But yeah, I used to, obviously as a boy of however old I was, probably 10 or something, I really did not want to watch Gem and the Holograms. I was like, I'm not watching this. Wasn't this Transformers or GoBots or...
Yeah. Again, fantastic 6. If you were a girl.
Not so okay. Good if not.
Also from 1987, there's The New Archies, which looks horrible. I mean, yeah. It doesn't even look like a good Archies cartoon, let alone a good cartoon full stop.
Only went for 14 episodes, so...
Yeah, I think... I mean, we occasionally had Archie stuff over here. I think more in the 90s. I think we had, because obviously there was Sabrina the Teenage Witch. They had that cartoon version of that, didn't they? After the TV program got big. But I think they did some sort of Archies thing off the back of that as a new cartoon.
Was I right, or would I be right, that Archies was kind of America's Beano / Dandy in terms of kids' comics?
Yeah, I think in terms of availability, but obviously they're a lot more sanitised than...
yeah.
No one was getting sort of beaten up or caned or spanked.
Nashed.
Yeah, or nashed. No one was pulling dodges.
It sounds so wrong. Who was your favourite Beano guy?
Backstreet Kids were my favourites.
Yeah, like I love the Backstreet Kids.
Mm. Yeah.
Beano or Dandy? Throw that one as well.
Beano.
Ooh, I do like Desperate Dan.
Have you seen the new Dandy?
No, no.
Harry Hill's in it now.
Oh, goodness. I used to like Harry Hill. Emphasis on used to, so...
I still do.
Blech. What do you reckon, Gary? Dandy or Beano?
I was probably more Beano, although... As I got older and fatter, my friends used to make regular comparisons to me and Desperate Dan.
With a big cow pie on the table.
Yeah, they used to jokingly say that was what they were going to get me for that year's birthday or Christmas.
Oh, I bet they tasted fantastic.
I don't know about the horns, though. They got to have been taken off first.
Yeah, sort of the drawing very tasty-looking food is definitely a Beano thing, the Dandy thing, because obviously they'd... have big slap-up meals in Lord Snooty of, like, huge piles of mashed potato with hundreds of sausages sticking out of them. Like, yeah, obviously, British comics much better than American ones. I think we should establish that.
Yeah.
Next thing from 1987 is Hello Kitty's Furry Tale Theater.
Is that a film compilation?
Series, what I read. And from the intro, it looks, not that I would watch it, but it looks surprisingly better than I thought.
I mean, I think this has been released in recent times, because obviously Hello Kitty is eternal. People always love Hello Kitty. They'll never stop loving Hello Kitty. Worth noting, this and the new Archies had Toei Animation working on it. So I don't know what the animation quality was on either of those. I mean, they didn't look particularly great. I've certainly seen better animated Hello Kitty looking things.
Mm.
Moving on. Sylvanian Family. You two say you've seen this.
Tragically.
Yeah, I don't know how, but I think it's a girl thing.
It was a girl thing cartoon series. My memory of it, this is not me looking up anything, but my memory of it was it would always start with a child that had a trait that they wanted to get rid of or overcome. So it would be like a fear of spiders or a fear of the dark or they were too messy. And then this wizard type character would shrink them down so that they were small enough to fit through this door into the world of the Sylvanian families. And then they would have an adventure throughout the cartoon. And during the adventure, the character would be faced with a reason to conquer their fear or trait that they were trying to get rid of. And at the same time, help the Sylvanian families out. And then it would kind of end from there. It was kind of one of those moral of the story type things at the end.
Did you have the toys, Gary? Or
no, I think my sister had a few of them. She had the house and I think some of the dolls. Again, yeah, not my cup of tea.
Yeah, but I think my cousin was the reason I watched it or possibly have seen it at some point on VHS maybe.
Yeah,
because
it actually had, although I never saw the toys of it, in the cartoon there were actually villainous characters. There was like a bat that was always trying to ruin whatever it was the Sylvanian family characters were planning. And there was a couple of the Sylvanian characters that were not necessarily evil but were easily led astray by the bat. So the kind of like bully bear typey characters that were inherently good guys, but sometimes the bat would convince them to play pranks on the Sylvanian families and then they'd regret it. But
yeah, I think you can still get the toys, actually. I'm sure you can.
They are huge still.
They're still collectible, I think.
Yeah, they are massive. They're still like the best selling things. Along with Lego, they dominate the toy market. My boss, she's got twins, and the male twin is obsessed with Scooby-Doo, and for Christmas wanted everything Scooby-Doo. The entire Christmas list to Santa was everything was Scooby-Doo related, and she was not going to get him any of it because she didn't like Scooby-Doo. However, her daughter wanted Sylvanian Families, and because she liked for Sylvanian Families when she was a kid.
Sure they have boy varieties of Sylvanian families now anyway. I'm sure there's more, like some of the toys are actually aimed at lads rather than just girls. Sure they are.
This does look so. It looks very girly.
It
looks very Doll's House-y still to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's two, seems to be another series. There's two DVDs in the UK, by looks of things. One would appear to be this one we're talking about. And it's like got a cartoon cover, and it's from Jetix. Five Great Adventures from the World of Sylvanian Families. The other one looks like it might be stop motion with the actual doll-type characters.
Oh.
Yeah, the one I watched was definitely the cartoon.
Stories narrated by Bernard Cribbins.
Who is? Who's Bernard Cribbins?
Do you not know who Bernard Cribbins is?
I don't.
He was the voice of the Wombles.
Oh, that old fella, yeah.
Yes. Donna's granddad in Doctor Who.
Yep.
Most recently.
Right.
Yeah, great actor. And singer as well. He's released records in the 60s, produced by George Martin. Digging a Hot Right Said Fred, that was one of his songs.
Family, yeah.
Yeah, they are very popular. I think there's a DVD of this. It says for £4.99, or you can buy it from other people. £1.28 plus £1.26 delivery. Yes.
Bargain for five excellent adventures.
Cheaper than the toys.
Yes. Yeah, definitely cheaper than the toys.
Toys are ridiculously expensive.
Right, moving on to a show I've never seen.
No.
Or hadn't even heard of until I was making this list. Diplodo. which is another dinosaur based show.
Like a Diplodocus or something. Judging from the title as well.
Well, let me see.
It looks quite crazy.
Yeah, they're sort of very cartoony dinosaurs rather than sort of the more anthropomorphic ones we'll get with dino sources. Then in 1988, we have Slimer and the Real Ghostbusters, which was the follow-up series to The Real Ghostbusters. And it was not as good.
No.
So I don't know why they'd make Slimer a kind of pinnacle point of the title and of the story. I don't particularly like Slimer.
Kids liked
Slime, as we've established.
Yeah, absolutely. Kids wanted, if something made a mess and was disgusting, kids loved it. So most kids loved Slimer. I certainly remember my younger brother, Slimer was his favourite character out of the entire Ghostbusters series.
I was about to say, I would hate to meet anyone who has Slimer as their favourite character.
Yeah, he liked, in the terms of the Ghostbusters toys, when my brother was old enough to start getting them, probably around the time this came out, he had the Slimer toy, and that was, Slimer was his favourite character.
Yeah, again, they're using Toei Animation here, along with various non-Japanese studios. Another sequel followed, Dennis the Menace 2. And once again, they were using Toei rather than TMS. So I think there probably was a drop-off in animation quality there.
Did we get that over here as, like, Dennis 2? I don't remember.
I don't remember, no.
Was
we
it
may
just another series of it called
Quite
Dennis.
Possibly, but I imagine, because I think if they'd like doing 60-odd in the first series, a lot of the time, particularly for the terrestrial channels, I think they only bothered buying the first series of something.
Just reuse it.
Yeah, because I don't remember ever seeing, like, the later series of Thundercats, say. Because it wasn't until I got the internet that I even knew there was characters like Pumira or the later Thundercats they introduced into the series. Because I never saw them when they were being shown on the BBC.
Yeah.
So I don't think, because we don't show as many cartoons all the time in the UK, I don't think there was ever any need to possibly buy those later episodes. Same with that Corporal Cape Man thing in Inspector Gadget.
Yeah, indeed.
And moving on to the other part of the great debate that started this episode.
Cops.
These episodes, yes.
Fighting crime in a future time. And for those who don't know,
organization of police specialists.
Exactly. Great show. Great show. Great characters. I went on YouTube to rewatch the intro actually, and there was a fantastic comment on the YouTube link that people had upvoted, and it's by Paul2804, and it reads, shall I read it? Nah, I can't do an Australian accent.
Yes, just do it if you like.
In Australia, this was on just before we went to school. This pumped me up for the day and made me want to protect the weaker kids.
Awesome.
So this obviously bred great people, this series. Brought out the great in people. But no, I used to like this. Seen a lot on VHS since and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think at this point, I think Chaplin was definitely out the thing. Because I don't see his name on
nothing.
The wiki page for it. I think it's definitely Andy Haywood is now sort of the driving force at Deke. Yeah, I mean, I didn't see much of this. I think, I don't remember when it was showing when I was, I mean, I'd probably been approaching teenager status at this point, so I don't know, I'm not sure my interest in Cops was particularly high, but I do remember seeing it occasionally. I do remember that fighting crime in a future time.
Great tagline. Fantastic tagline.
Well, basically, it's a bunch of cops in the future year of 2020, which is now, of course, only nine years away.
Yeah.
Won't be long before we have to
fight crime in a future
cops.
Time, yeah. Did you have a favourite character, or can you not remember that far back?
I don't remember. I mean, I can only remember Bulletproof Vess, the main character.
Voiced by a baseball player, apparently.
Of course he would.
Ken Ryan.
Look at these lists of names here to see whether I remember anybody else. No, I think he's the only guy I remember. How about you, Gary?
I seem to remember, wasn't there one called O'Malley?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Long Arm O'Malley. The long arm of the law. But yeah, he wasn't my favourite. I like the guy with the dog. Rex Bowser Pointer, he's called. And the dog was called Blitz. See, I like the interaction between like an animal dog and stuff. That's pretty, well, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Obviously at the time he got, was that around the time of K-9 and Turner and Hooch, or was that a bit later?
I don't know.
Let's see whether or not. Turner and Hooch, 1989. So no, it preempted the cop and dog craze.
Ooh.
Maybe that's where they got the idea from.
Yeah, definitely. Now, 65 episodes. Goodness gracious.
Like I said, I think that tended to be, I think, you made that amount of episodes. Yeah, because it was syndicated straight away. So I think that's why they may have to make 65 to qualify for syndication. So it hadn't been made for a channel.
So
if you wanted to be, you had to like make a bunch to begin with to get syndicated in the first place.
I'm reading here the villains, which I can't remember, were called Crooks, but I don't know what that was an acronym for.
It does not seem to say.
Crooks. Something, surely.
Maybe they never bothered, mate, deciding what it stood for.
Mm-hmm. Surely what? Crooks is enough.
Yes. Yeah, apparently, well, I didn't realise it was based on a toy line called Cops and Crooks.
Yeah, as I said, I don't remember seeing Cops toys.
They probably weren't that good. There's a little picture here on Wikipedia, and it doesn't particularly look that good.
No, they've like given bulletproof vests, it's like an actual
jacket.
Fabric jacket.
Which looks awful. Oh, God.
Yeah, I don't know whether they did come out. I'm sure I remember seeing them around
car boots
house.
Or something. It looks like a car boot toy.
I mean, because I know people who liked it a lot, as much as you liked it. And I'm sure they might have had some figures, but yeah, I don't remember ever coming across them in the wild, so to speak, in shops or anything. So maybe they would. I mean, because I've seen a couple of weeks ago in Tesco's here, they'd got the figures for the Thor movie, which is out in the UK next week. Or this week, as you'll probably be listening to this podcast. A couple of weeks ago, they'd already knocked 2/3 of the price off them.
God.
So it's quite possibly this was, the Cops toys may have gone straight to, like, whatever the
bargain bin
pound stretchers were.
Yeah.
So I remember there was some toy lines I collected as a kid, which we never saw the cartoons for. And there were cartoons for them. It's just because they weren't popular in America, and so they still had loads of toys, and so they just dumped them in the European market at like budget shops.
Awesome.
I mean, that works the same way in the opposite direction. I think that was the case with some Zoids for a while, is that you could find Zoids in really cheap in places when it wasn't being promoted, sort of in that gap between when it was originally popular in the 80s and then when it got relaunched in the 2000s.
Mm. It's actually out on DVD now. Cops.
Oh,
first
good.
Volume.
I'll rush down the shelves of Viper.
That was Cops.
That was Cops. So, better than Jason the World Warriors?
I certainly think so. I mean, Paul 2804 from Australia seems to agree.
Yeah, Jason the World Warriors wasn't getting people pumped up to protect weaker kids. He was probably getting kids pumped up to smash in plants.
Yes! Going into next door neighbours' gardens and destroying their pot plants and shouting, "Take that, saw boss!"
Did you do that, Gary?
Of course not.
Ah. Oh, well. What's next? Starcom.
Starcom, yeah. I think this showed very early in Channel 4 mornings again. I think it may have bypassed the toys completely, much later than the toys. The toys came out here. The gimmick of the toys was that they had magnets in their feet.
Yep.
And you could stick them to their spaceships.
In different positions and stuff.
Yeah.
That's quite a good idea.
I don't know who worked on it, because it just says KK C&D Asia, which I think was the animation group Dee had set up in the first place. But yeah, looking at the opening credits for it again now, the opening credits look pretty great.
Definitely.
I don't know whether or not the cartoon looks as good as the opening credits is another matter, because that was often the case in 80s action cartoons, is that they had really great looking opening credits, like Thundercats did. And then when you go back and you remember the opening credits, and then you go back and actually watch the actual cartoon, and you think, oh, no, it's not quite as good as I remember. But, yeah, so it was the... I can't remember what the concept of it was beyond the magnets in their feet.
Yeah, I was going to say, I never watched the series, but I had a lot of the toys as a kid.
Right, so not much to say about StarCon. Yeah. Oh, so StarCon, the US Space Force, apparently, was its full name.
Ah.
Yeah, it was developed with NASA's help.
I wonder if the spaceships that were in use were actual ones that NASA had written up blueprints.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, no. So I do. Let me just correct that. It was developed with the help of the Young Astronaut Council. With the original intention of sparking young viewers' interest in the US NASA space program.
Good luck with that.
These guys. Yeah, so they were fighting the bad guys. The good guys, StarCon, were fighting Shadow Force.
Ooh, scary. Which,
who, what they were. It doesn't appear to be much of a description of what they were.
How long did this run for, by the way?
One season. So, Bollocks of Things, not very long at all. 13 episodes. Mm. So it's a bit like Pole Position. Sort of,
short and sweet.
Yeah, short and sweet. Yeah, Emperor Dark. They were trying to take over the cosmos, and it was up to StarCom to stop them. There you go. Yeah, I'd be interested in going looking at it again, because the mecha designs look quite interesting. I just wonder whether it holds up to how good it looks in the opening sequence. Let me see what the animation director's done. We've got a name here. Kazumi Fukushima. They also worked on... not much else of interest. They're a veteran. They worked on UFO Robo Grandizer, 1970s Go Nagai thing, and various other Go Nagai things. So, yeah, the animation might not be super great. Those shows weren't really well known for their animation quality. Right, next up is Captain N, the Games Master. Game Master.
This looks awesome. I've never seen it, but it looks like a just fangasm.
It's one of those ones that was when it was first released, but when you look at it now and you see how they butchered the characters that are in it, you kind of cry on the inside.
I have to say, I didn't think much of it at the time. It just seemed really stupid.
It does seem like a strange...
I think I was young enough still to appreciate it, though. I liked the idea of being able to strap a Nintendo NES joypad to my waist and have powers with it.
You still do, Gary. You still do. I've seen you play through Mario.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a holster for my Nintendo Zapper as well.
But yeah, this was basically a big advert for the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Yep. Mm.
Where a kid gets
characters
taken into some sort of video world and hangs out with various characters who bear little resemblance to their computer game versions.
Like, who actually did pop up? Was, like, Mario anywhere to be seen? Or
Mario was... Yeah, Mario was busy on the Super Mario Super Show. Yeah.
Oh, I understand.
Link appeared in, like, I think one or two episodes, maybe?
Yeah, I think I preferred the Super Mario and the Link. I definitely preferred the Link one overall. Of the three, that was the thing I preferred, the Legend of Zelda cartoon.
Mm. That was pretty good. I like that.
But again, I don't have too many memories of it.
Other than, excuse me, princess.
I mean, if that hadn't been turned into some sort of horrible... me, but I don't think I'd have remembered that either.
I remembered that.
In fact, it's probably Captain N's the one I remembered the most, just by how appalling it was.
I mean, let's touch on a character that's dear to my heart, Mega Man. Now, you've got Mega Man as he looks in the games, the little blue robotic man. Oh, well, he looks like a kid, actually. That basically, like, kills people, bad robots and stuff. Built by Dr. Light. The Mega Man in Captain N, his armor was green, he had a dark blue visor over his eyes, and he actually spoke like a man and sounded like he was smoking 40 a day. And he had to use the word mega at the beginning or at the end of every sentence. Much like Pitt from Kid Icarus had to use the word Icus at the end of every sentence. He would attach it as a syllable to the end of the last word.
Yeah, and wasn't Simon Belmont from Castlevania sort of a goof?
He was completely overly vain and very, very camp. And he was scared of everything. He was a complete coward. And it kind of makes you wonder how he supposedly slayed Dracula when they made him out to be a complete wimp. There was also a giant Game Boy that had a face. Which to this day I still didn't work out what that was about.
I don't think I remember that part at all. I just see that here. I don't remember him, so I don't think I saw that far into it.
Oh yeah, the Game Boy, he appeared I think like fourth or fifth episode in, but then remained afterwards.
It says here first episode of the second season.
Oh, there you go. Okay. So I remember a lot of episodes with the Game Boy in it though. But I do remember.
Was he your favourite character?
God no, I couldn't stand the Game Boy.
What was its name? Was it actually called?
It was called Game Boy, I think.
Yeah, so you had Kevin Keane, who was the hero, who'd been transported
into
Videoland as Princess Lana, the ruler of Videoland.
Who wasn't from any video game in particular, they just kind of basically made her the token princess.
Duke, Kevin's dog. Simon Belmont from Castlevania, Pitt from Kid Icarus, Mega Man from Mega Man, Game Boy, and then on the villain side, you've got Mother Brain from Metroid.
Oh, right.
Mother Brain had an awesome voice.
Yes, she did, yes. The King Hippo from Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
except in Punch-Out, he had normal tan skin. In this, they made his skin blue.
Oh, don't ask. Yes. Eggplant Wizard from Kid Icarus.
Oh,
and
dear.
Dr. Wily from Mega Man.
And yeah, and he looks shocking as well. In fact, they like in a lot of the episodes with Dr. Wily, you would see some of the robots that he built from the Mega Man games, and again, they usually looked pretty shocking. And instead of having Roll, who is Mega Man's sister, they basically had Mega Girl, who just looked like Mega Man but was pink.
Did she sound like she smoked 40 a day as well?
I don't remember. I think she had the whole mega complex, though.
Ah.
Where she had to say mega in every sentence.
It was tragic.
Donkey Kong was in it as well.
Yeah, they mentioned some of the minor villains who crop up, apparently. Donkey Kong, the Count from Castlevania, Dragon Lord from Dragon Warrior, and Ganon from Legend of Zelda.
Mm.
Yeah, and there's only like three more from the 80s that really had any sort of Japanese animation involvement, and I've not heard of any of them.
See, I would have thought Gary would like this next one, The Little Golden Bookland, just because it has talking boats.
I've never seen it.
And
so...
the boats' faces are scary.
It was animated special, apparently.
Oh, special, alright. It's very strange looking.
Yeah, I'm not really familiar with the Little Golden Books line. It's like those painted children's books. Maybe I am familiar with them. So basically an adaptation of characters which appeared in those books. Then after that, there was Adventures of Ronald McDonald.
I can't believe they made that.
I can't find much trace of in terms of pinning it down. And then G.I. Joe Operation Dragonfire.
Was that a film or series?
I think it might be a bunch of special. I don't think it's well loved by the G.I. Joe obsessives because it's not from the Marvel Sunbow series.
Ah, okay. Would we have got that as Action Force again?
Probably not at this point, no. I'm not sure they put anything out for Action Force after Action Force the movie, to be honest.
Okay.
Maybe they did, but my brother wasn't interested at that point, I'm guessing, because he got, Rise Serpentor Rise, which was like the miniseries, or the episodes which led up to the movie. And then, so you had Rise Serpentor Rise, which gave you one origin for Serpentor, and then, apparently they wanted a different origin, so they gave him another origin in Action Force the movie. But yeah. Yeah, so it wasn't... I don't think people liked this one as much as the Sunburn Marvel ones.
Mm-hmm.
From what I remember from hearing from rabid G.I. Joe fans. I'm sure they are. But it still had Sergeant Slaughter in it. Because I think for some reason in the Action Force thing, they changed his name to Sergeant Slammer.
WWE sometime, copyright.
Yeah, well, that could be it, yes. Or maybe he'd been changed. Because I think he was with the... Yeah, because it was a bit odd, wasn't he? Was he with the UWF when he went to do G.I. Joe because the WWF wouldn't let him do G.I. Joe?
Yeah, it might have been like that. It might have been...
Something along those lines, or AWA. I can't remember which one it is. But, yeah, there was some sort of legal... So that could be the reason why. But in those old dubs, they'd occasionally get it wrong or sort of get the mix wrong. So sometimes he'd be Slam Slaughter at one point. It was Sergeant Slam Slaughter. Or they just forget entirely and you'd be Sergeant Slaughter. And then, yes, that's the final one of the 80s. And after that point, they mainly used Korean, Chinese and Taiwanese studios. There's a few exceptions I noted. Magic Troll, which I couldn't find much about. I'm guessing that's
Yeah, I was going to say, is that those little stupid...
Oh, I hated them.
With the spiky hair.
Yeah.
I hated them.
They were a huge craze at school.
Yeah, they must be doing another craze at some point soon. Well, I think they recently had another one, didn't they, in the 2000s. But the Legend of Sarmati, Siegfried and Roy. That used to be on YouTube, but I couldn't find it anymore.
I couldn't find much of that, no.
So I'm guessing Siegfried and Roy probably took it down.
And Mummy's Alive, which apparently you two have both watched.
Which is all. I really like this.
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of it. I think it used to be on Saturday mornings.
I think it did.
Lots
of gold and blue, which is like the dun colour for Egyptian legend and myth. But I liked this. I really liked this.
Yeah, it was like a team of good guy mummies, but I can't remember what they did.
They kind of transformed into like a stronger version of themselves, like how they used to be, possibly, when they were still alive. I don't know. But yeah, I like that.
It was very much an Egyptian mythology type.
Yeah, kind of, but I don't know how true it stuck to anything. But no, I did like this. What was next? Sonic.
Yes, they also co-produced with Sega the first Sonic cartoon, the one where they were obsessed with chili dogs.
Ah, that was the one I had seen. Yeah,
I've got this on VHS.
Sure I'd seen it. Yeah, I actually liked that one. Believe me.
Yeah.
It had what was it, Grinder and what was the bird robot called?
I can't remember. But of the Sonic cartoons, I'd say this one's my favourite because it's cartoony rather than trying to be a serious drama starring a hedgehog and a two-tailed fox.
Yeah, I know. I liked it. I thought it was cool.
It's fun. Yeah,
it was amusing. Robotnik was pretty spot on as well. It had a kind of Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote kind of slapstick about it, but it was good.
And the very last thing was Ultra Force, which spoke to what I mentioned earlier. It was a adaptation of the, I think it was Malibu Comics, but I think Marvel had bought it at this point. And Mook were involved, but they only did the opening. They didn't actually do the actual show.
It is so damn epic, the intro. It's awesome.
Does the show live up to it?
Probably not.
No, I watched a little bit of it. No, it's quite torturous, the show is. But you know how the old X-Men cartoon...
Oh, yes.
Sort of zoom the camera around and have them on their names and stuff.
Yeah.
It's a lot like that, only sort of even more overwrought with characters you've never heard of.
You think everyone should watch this intro. If you do anything after listening to this,
make sure we put up a link for that.
It's really good.
There's apparently there's some sort of legal... I think Marvel would like to do something with those Malibu characters again.
Oh, right.
But apparently there's all sorts of legal wranglings which stop them from doing anything. Perhaps they don't want to actually pay the people who created them in order to use them for something. Because there's the character Prime, who's basically a Captain Marvel ripoff of a kid who turns into like a muscular superhero. Only in his case, he turns into a muscular superhero via the use of magic slime.
Oh, slime again.
Yes. But I think they've long wanted to make a movie out of that character.
Mm.
But for various reasons, they can't, apparently. But that wraps up our talk about Deke.
Yeah.
It's good because I'm losing my voice at this point.
It's been great having you on, Gary, I've got to say.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Excellent. And I'm sure we'll have you on again at some point.
Yeah, hopefully.
Else.
Yeah. And Askew needs to produce that link, the one he said about the greatest cartoons. Because I'm curious to see where Jace is, and I'm curious to see.
Oh, right, yeah.
I'm actually curious to see what the top 10 is as well. Although I kind of imagine that Thundercats and Transformers are both guaranteed top fives.
We'll probably have a lot of stuff that stupidly. In fact, I've got it up right now. If we've got time to quickly see the top 10.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think I've got it up. Hold on, not yet. Here we go. I think this is it. This is loading. Come on, internet.
At this point, you probably really wish we did actually edit these shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, it's loading. Because it keeps taking us to another link. Right, this is it. Right, number one. Or do you want to count down? Or,
do 10 to 1.
I think this is an up-to-date version, but you're going to get it anyway. Number 10, Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Mm-hmm. We must do a show on that at some point, seeing as we've had a question.
Number 9, The Flintstones.
Yeah, Flintstones is good for the first two series.
8, Futurama.
Not sure that's better than The Flintstones. But,
yeah, of course not. Oh, I definitely don't agree with this one. Family Guy, number 7.
No, definitely not. That would not even be near my top 100. It would be a different country.
Ooh, this is an outsider. I'm quite pleased about this. The Tick at number 6.
That's a surprise.
I mean, I like The Tick, but
top 10,
start,
hell no.
No, the animation's not good enough for it to be a top 10 of anything.
Number 5, Beavis and Butthead.
As much as I liked it when I watched it as a teenager, no.
They're coming back. They're currently making new episodes of it.
Oh. Number 4, South Park.
Yeah, South Park's pretty good.
It has its up and down. I guess it's
for what
running
it is.
Long enough.
But number 4, really? Really? Number 3, this is more like it. Looney Tunes at number 3.
Yeah, it's a bit odd to put the entirety of... You're comparing something which is basically a film short series to TV series at this point. Yeah.
Number 2, which I absolutely love, Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah, that's good, but I'm not sure it's better than Looney Tunes as a whole.
And number 1, I'm sure you guys can guess.
Simpsons.
Nope, Rainbow Bright. Yeah. The Simpsons.
Yeah. Righty-ho, thank you very much for listening.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us, Gary. And
no
you can
problem.
Find us at awesome-engine.com. You can find me on Twitter at awesome_engine. We find us on Facebook at facebook.com/dynamiteinthebrain.
Yep. Find me at Twitter, ANTASKEW. I forgot the spell there for a second. But yeah, that's where I am. And Gary...
And,
you can find
you?
Me on facebook.com/CHIDOMARU.
I think you should have that as your Twitter name as well, like a provisional Twitter
provisional
account.
Provisional Twitter name, yeah. Somebody will go and steal it now that you've said that. But yeah.
Now, they won't hear this till next week, you see.
I better go and make it now then.
Yeah, but there you go. That's his Twitter, touch wood.
Yeah, don't steal it in the future.
Yeah.
In the future time, fighting crime.
That's it.
Thanks for listening.
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.